Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you so much for joining us. Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati with Jake Gutierrez, now joined by Buster Olney. Buster, I was ready to start making some postseason plans yesterday in the sixth inning. And then this damn Jose Ramirez decided to hit a couple of home runs and left me very angry about the Royals' bullpen. But even though it was a disappointing loss at the hands of Shane Bieber and Jose Ramirez, the Royals are off to a 3-2 start, and the offenses look good. The starting pitching's kind of been uneven, but Danny Duffy and Jacob Junis look good. The bullpen's had their issues, but okay. First week, all right. And I even though they lost yesterday, I leave that series feeling like the Royals definitely have a better lineup and I think have a real good shot to finish ahead of Cleveland and at least maybe in third place in the AL Central. What did you think of the Royals' first week at the office, Buster?
Yes, Stephen, for you and I, we can invoke Dennis Green, right? They are
right.
Who we thought they are, right?
That's right.
Might have been some projections, the Pacotas, service to the world, the Las Vegas bookies were saying 70 wins. No, they are better than that. They have more depth than that. As you say, their lineup is better than that. Their pitching is better than that. They made some, I thought, really, great moves over the course of the wintertime, perfect moves at the right time, given the budgetary constraints they have. And they're going to be a good team. And it's funny you mentioned Cleveland. It does feel like the Indians are kind of going to be a unintentional barometer of the Royals' progress, because I think everyone looks at the White Sox as probably being a favorite. The Twins, having had success the last couple of years, also being a favorite. Where the Indians, on the other hand, going through this transition with Francisco Lindor, it's almost like the bar for the Royals is whether or not they can pass the Indians to go into third place in the American League Central.
And now, Buster, they do take on that White Sox team that you mentioned. And the Sox, look, it's really early. They're not off to like a red-hot start or anything. And they've now had to put Tim Anderson on the DL as well. So they've had a couple big injuries to start the season with. What are the Royals walking into this afternoon with this White Sox team?
A team that hasn't hit his stride yet. I saw them over the weekend. We had the White Sox and the Angels on Sunday Night Baseball. That's where Tim Anderson got hurt. You could see him pulling up in the last 30 feet, running out of ball in his first plate appearance. And, of course, in our in the control room, of course, we're all like, no! Because we had all these elements built around Tim Anderson. Yeah, and the loss of him from the lineup, that's devastating. Eloy Jimenez, going out, that's devastating for them, although Yermín Mercedes has been amazing in his first week in the big leagues. The one thing I'd say about the White Sox that we haven't seen in the first week that we will see as the year goes along, their bullpen is going to be phenomenal. It might be, the best and deepest bullpen in baseball. For years the standard, I feel like, has been the Yankees. And this will be the year I think the White Sox will supplant them with Liam Hendricks at the back end and a lot of guys before that who throw really, really hard and have some nasty stuff. And, that to me is when the White Sox will begin to hit their stride once that bullpen starts to perform. So for the Royals, from the Royals' perspective, hopefully that's not this weekend.
Okay, so Buster, and look, trust me, Jake and Nate know this. I never bring up anything in relation to my rotisserie baseball team.
Never.
I can promise you that. And I'm not bringing this up because I've got this guy at $3 and he's been in my farm system for a couple of years. But this Michael Kopech, and people have been waiting to watch him, and I know it was somewhat of a surprise that they said, okay, he's going to start out in the bullpen. Ooh, boy, does he look good. And this is one of the young arms. He opted out last year. He had injury before then. And originally with the Red Sox, and the White Sox got him in a trade, but he looks like he could be something else.
He absolutely does. And look, no one has ever doubted his talent. No one has ever doubted that he potentially is some of the best stuff in baseball. As you say, he opted out last year. I think this is a young man who's had some challenges in his life, and he is growing through those. And he's someone, you know, and it's left for him to, you know, to talk out loud about what those are. But I will say this. He's someone who, given what he's gone through, when I watch him pitch, I'm rooting for him. And I'm hoping, you know, that everything goes great and that he puts it all together. You know, he is definitely an X factor for the White Sox as they move forward in 2021, but also in years ahead, because, you know, if he's able to put everything together on the field, then, boy, he could just be an amazing pitcher.
Yeah, four innings already. Four innings, one hit, eight strikeouts out of the bullpen. So, and I'm sure that the way it works, he hasn't pitched a couple of days, so quite sure that the Royals will see him during their time in Chicago. Nate Buchady.
Yeah, and now the Royals face Lance Lynn today as a starter as well, Buster, and he's getting into his mid 30s, but still put up numbers last year. What version of Lance Lynn do you think the Royals will see this time around?
A good one. Now, you mentioned he's still putting up numbers. His fastball velocity is actually increasing. I think he's one of the pitchers in baseball who, as time has gone on, he's learned more about himself. You know, the best example that in recent years is Jacob DeGrom, who just, you know, the other day he lived in 100 to 102 mile per hour range, and in part because through modern technology, he's learned more about how his body works and how the ball comes out of his hand and how to make his delivery more efficient. You know, Jacob DeGrom has a very different physique than Lance Lynn. But I think Lance Lynn is also someone who's going through that process, and he's throwing harder than he ever has. And if you've ever gotten a chance to talk with Lance Lynn, and I did a lot during his days with the Cardinals and the Twins, I mean, he has the perfect pitcher's mentality. He is coming at you. And, you know, he will attack hitters. And the challenge for the Royals will be to get the ball in the air. Because if you can do that, then that's where teams do their damage against Lance Lynn. He will give up his share of home runs. And I do wonder if, you know, in 2021, if the conditions are absolutely right for Lance Lynn, and Jake will want to be paying attention to this, to be even more effective as a pitcher, because it does look like, it does feel like that what we're seeing is a mush ball, that the baseball has definitely changed. You guys saw it at the end of the game yesterday for the Royals.
Yeah.
Michael Taylor hitting a ball that it looked like every player on the field assumed, oh, that's gone, that's going to be 30 rows back, and instead it dies in the warning track.
I thought that was gone. Michael Taylor thought, everyone thought that was gone. Like, okay. All right, well, maybe not.
And Buster, you on your podcast talked about this, there are statistics already backing up this mushball idea?
Yeah, so Paul Hembekides is a great researcher at ESPN, and I asked him before he came to the podcast yesterday, I said, hey, look, can you look at any of the early data to see if there's any indication that what I'm seeing anecdotally is true, that the ball is simply not traveling as far? Because, geez, being at the ballpark in Anaheim on Sunday, I saw Mike Trout just club a ball to center field, and you're like, okay, that's gone. The other day, we saw Pete Alonso take this sort of swing with the kind of trajectory and this sort of force that you assumed in recent seasons that the ball was going to go out, and the ball just died. And so I asked Hembo to look and see if there's any early data to back that up, and what he found was that in this first week, the average fly ball is traveling 15 feet less than in recent seasons. Mm. And, you know, there's also, he had some great data about, which is too deep for me to remember or even get into, but, you know, to cut to the chase on it, the hitters, you know, hit a ball at a certain velocity, at a certain angle, and the percentage of home runs with those type of swings has dropped precipitously in this first week. Which means these big swings we've seen hitters take in recent years, in this first week of this season anyway, an indication that they're not going to get the same rewards. And I kind of like that. I kind of like the idea that, you know, hitters, it's not going to just be a three true outcome type of baseball, that if they just get a ball in the air, it's going to fly out.
Buster Olney is our guest. Buster, we've already seen some injuries to some young stars. Obviously, everyone focused on Fernando Tatis Jr., and his shoulder injury, but also another player that I love that I think will be a superstar is Pirates third baseman Ke'Bryan Hayes, and I saw that he already went on the IL with a hand or a wrist problem. What's the update on those two young stars and how long they might be out?
Yeah, with Hayes, and you're right to point him out, I've had some evaluators say that within a year or two, he could be one of the best players in baseball. You know, he's that good defensively. He's shown an ability to get bat to ball, an understanding of the strike zone. And so you hope for the Pirates that he comes back. You know, those hand and wrist injuries for hitters are so touchy, and sometimes they get more complicated than what we realize. And with Fernando Tatis Jr., I mean, you guys saw the swing the other day that he took, and he crumpled in front of home plate in a ball. A couple days ago, A.J. Preller, the general manager of the Padres, came out and, you know, gave a very glass-half-full view of it, said no surgery is needed. And I can tell you, you know, it reminds me of my old mantra as a reporter, teams are not obligated to tell us everything about injuries. They don't have to. You know, this is private information. And we, as media members and fans, are not required to believe everything they tell us. And so when A.J. Preller came out and painted a rosy picture, I got to tell you, my red flag went up. And I'm like, I don't think we're hearing the complete truth here on that sort of injury. You know, a subluxation in his left shoulder for a right-handed hitter. You know, what I've been told by doctors in my time covering baseball is that part of the reason why these guys are so good at what they do is they have this incredible flexibility. And this type of issue is not uncommon. We've seen other hitters have it. I was texted by a couple of executives with other teams who had the same reaction I did, like, uh-oh, there's got to be some more information here that we're going to learn about as we go along. And you really hope that he's okay because he's one of the most exciting players in baseball. But I kind of wonder if we, as we go along here, if we're going to find out more information about what's really going on in his shoulder and what, you know, some potential long-term issues might pop up might be.
Well, this is the part where I semi-weekly say, you know, my wife's a physical therapist, Buster, and she tells me subluxations are incredibly painful, for one thing, because it's like a temporary dislocation of the shoulder, and that they happen, once they happen, they can happen over and over and over again because that capsule isn't as tight after, you know, after something that dramatic or traumatic happens to your shoulder. You've got to wonder if the Padres aren't worried about this becoming a repetitive thing, even if it's not something that needs surgery right now. Like, is this something they're going to be dealing with over and over again going down the road?
Which is an interesting question in year one of a 14,
right,
$340 million contract. Not even year one, week one of the 14-year, $340 million contract. Again, speaking in very general terms with folks who are not, have no firsthand knowledge about Tatis's condition, what I heard the last 48 hours is sometimes people with this sort of condition, I think your wife will back me up on this, they deal with arthritis.
Mm-hmm.
They have things that they have to work through as they go forward. So it sounds like that you had the same red flags pop up in your mind as I did as you see a player crumple on the ground in incredible pain and knowing that this is not something that's going to be corrected surgically.
And speaking of injuries, I know that hey, there were a lot of Royals fans, and look, I would have been happy too if the Royals would have brought back Trevor Rosenthal, especially since he's a local guy. But man, it looks like he unfortunately his season might be done before it even gets started. Is that the case? Could this be season ending for him?
It's possible, given the type of surgery that he might need. And what Bob Melvin, the Oakland manager, told reporters yesterday is that he, you know, needs thoracic outlet surgery, potentially. And that not only is the surgery definitely knock him out for months, but with pitchers who've gone through this, it's very uncertain on the backside about how they're going to be as they come back. Again, Trevor Rosenthal, you know, he's been an exciting pitcher. You hope for the best and, you know, cross your fingers for him moving forward. But he certainly is out indefinitely.
That's right. He was really good for the Royals. Hey, Buster, I know that you're excited for people to watch this documentary about Freddie Freeman, the Braves' excellent first baseman. Tell us a little bit about it, please.
Yeah, really, you know, in my almost 20 years working at ESPN, one of the most exciting things I've been involved with, and that is to, you know, to do this piece on Freddie Freeman's life, which has really come full circle. And I got to tell you, you know, when I interviewed Freddie, and it was the day before Thanksgiving, extensively about his mom, who passed away when Freddie was 10, it was one of the most moving experiences of my life. You know, you guys have done interviews, I've done interviews where players are emotional, but in this case, you know, Freddie made up his mind going into this interview that he was going to talk about his mom and his dad because he wanted to honor them. He thought that was the best way to honor them. We were scheduled to do an interview for 90 minutes. It lasted 4 hours.
Wow.
Because he was just overcome so often in talking about his parents and what they went through. His mom died of melanoma when he was 10, and he described in detail everything he went through at that time, you know, how devastating it was, and then how he effectively saved his father's life when he was 12 years old by forcing him to go to the hospital. His dad had been depressed following the death of his mother. His dad had put on about 100 pounds. And Freddie, one night, compelled him to go to the hospital, and the doctor said to him, "Mr. Freeman, if you hadn't come in tonight, you wouldn't have woken up in the morning." And what's gone on with Freddie in the last year, you know, he and his wife, Chelsea, you know, Freddie's always wanted a big family, in part because of what he experienced as a kid, but they've tried to expand their family beyond their little boy, Charlie, and they had a lot of fertility issues, and they went through a lot, and they wound up choosing surrogacy. And within 9 days of when there was an embryo transfer scheduled for the surrogate, Chelsea became pregnant. And so as he told us, you know, there was twins with a twist that they've had just in recent months. Freddie is such a remarkable person. And to hear everything that, you know, that family has worked through and the way they've loved each other really was, you know, a special project, is a special project to help everybody get to see it.
Well, Buster, I can't wait to watch that. I think I have a new favorite baseball player because the charity foundation that I started with some friends of mine and I 9 years ago now was to honor a friend of mine who died of cancer and had two little kids, like Freddie was when his mom died of cancer. And the biggest reason I wanted to do it was because it really broke my heart that my friend's two children were 6 and 5 at the time. They weren't going to have as many, they weren't going to have the opportunity to get to know their dad, the amazing person that he was, the way that that I did, and I just didn't think it was fair. And so I'm always trying to think of ways to help them understand who their dad was and honor his legacy. I'm curious if did you learn anything from Freddie that I can use going forward to help Sean's my friend's two children understand or deal with or cope with that loss the way that Freddie did?
I would say this, and one of the most remarkable aspects of this story, you know, the details of this story, home videos, you know, potentially could be so important. So just this last Christmas, as Chelsea is moving, you know, into literally her last days before giving birth, and the surrogate's moving to her last days of giving birth, Freddie's dad remarried to this wonderful woman named Alma, and Alma Freeman had always heard about the existence of home videos within the Freeman house, but because of the pain, of course, associated with them, no one ever had found them or put them together. Well, she found them in the garage, and she quietly took them to a place, and she got all these home videos put on memory sticks. And so on Christmas Day, these memory sticks are delivered to the three Freeman sons, and Alma's getting texts from Freddie saying, "I just heard my mom's voice." And Chelsea, Freddie's, you know, wife, is texting and saying, "I just heard, you know, Rosemary for the first time." Charlie, the grandson, got to hear Rosemary's voice for the first time. That's something that's really important. And it's actually part of the reason why, guys, I think Freddie wanted, who typically doesn't do a lot of media stuff, decided to be involved in this project because he wants, you know, his father, his mother, indelibly preserved in some sort of project for his kids as they get older.
Wow. That's a wonderful story. And if you want to watch it, you could tune into ESPN on Sunday at 1 o'clock Central or 4 o'clock Central for E60's Full Circle, The Freddie Freeman Story. And so, again, we would encourage everyone to watch this. And as long as we've known you, Buster, when you speak so highly of something and you say that it was so meaningful and something that's important to watch, I'm sure our listeners will take your advice. So Sunday at 1 o'clock Central or 4 o'clock Central for E60's Full Circle, The Freddie Freeman Story. That is, that sounds like a can't miss. And certainly looking forward to watching that on Sunday. Buster, also today is obviously a very special day in baseball history because on this day in 1974, it was Hank Aaron's 715th home run, which I think still one of my, because that's one of those things I feel like we've watched that thousands of times. If you're a baseball fan, you've seen that over and over again. And I always like to find Craig Sager at the end chasing Hank Aaron down in the video. And so it's just, you know, and it's one of the most special moments in baseball history. What's that moment mean to you, the 715th home run by Hank Aaron?
Yeah, you're going to make me cry. I always get this way on this date. It's a special anniversary for me, too. I was 10 years old. I've told you guys, growing up in central Vermont, we didn't have a television. And, you know, growing up on a dairy farm, I'd go to bed early. Well, the next morning after he broke the record, there was a my mom, my wonderful late mom, left me a note on the kitchen table, and she wanted to tell me about what happened. And so she wrote that, you know, Hank Aaron broke Babe Ruth's record. And at the end, and I'll never forget this, in her beautiful handwriting, she wrote, "And the crowd cheered," which, you know, given I didn't fully understand the meaning of that at age 10 in the way that I do now. As Vin Scully said, you had a black man breaking the record of an iconic white man in the Deep South with that home run in Atlanta. But those words, are I can still remember them in my mind's eye, and the crowd cheered. And how wonderful that was. But I always think of my mom on this day.
Mm. That's awesome. What a beautiful story. And, you know, it's, you know, my mom's no longer with us as well. And I so many things I relate, and I love hearing that story from you. Like my mom, and I don't even want to say she was a fan because I don't think that's given it enough credit. She had an obsession with George Brett, right? And so I, like, some of my best memories as a kid where she would take me, and I was, you know, I was 4 years old in 76 when Brett kind of became a superstar and won the batting title. But I have such great memories of, like, standing in line at Kmart where George Brett was doing an appearance because he was endorsing some vitamins. You know, we'd stand in line for 2 hours just to see him. And I can still remember her face lighting up, like, when we get to the table. And it got to the point where we had shown up to so many of his appearances that at one point she had, like, gone off to the bathroom and I was still in line, and he looked at me and goes, "Where's your mom at?" And here comes my mom back, and she comes back to get the autograph and everything. You know, and so, like that's – and I every time I think about George Brett, I think about those, I think about my mom, and I think that's so cool that on this date that you have that such a special memory of your mom in relation to such an important date in baseball history. And that's that emotion, that's why we love you, Buster. So I'm so happy you shared that with us.
I appreciate that. It's funny, too, because the rest of my family, I've told you guys this before, they can't stand sports. But my mom knew that was important to me, and so she listened to the news on the radio and listened to the, you know, that highlight and wanted to make sure she documented it for me. But the rest of them, you know, my mom included, they never like sports.
Yeah, that's awesome. Hey, you know what? What a great memory. Hey, Buster, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it, and we look forward to watching the Freddie Freeman documentary on Sunday afternoon, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being on the show and sharing some great stories. That's awesome. I love that story about you can tell that. I almost got choked up over here. I'm glad I'm home so you can't see me. Now I'm disheveled. But what a beautiful story. And that was accurate about my mom, man. You you think I'm Google Gaga over Mahomes and everything, and you ain't never seen an adult just, you know. There was no, hey, Jake, there was no internet back in the 70s. I don't know if you know that, but, I mean,
what?
He was.
Life,
I mean,
without,
I don't
the
know
internet?
How she was like a detective. Any time this man was making an appearance in the greater Kansas City area, and we were there, and what would always frustrate me, we were there about 2 hours or 3 hours early.
I don't have an internet.
Because I'll be damned if we, you know, because there'd be, we got to cut the line off here. Sorry, George has got to go. Oh, no. She'll be just, that's never going to happen to us. I'm like, okay, mama. Maybe that shows a little bit why, you know, George Brett means so much to me. Because, I mean, honestly, every time now with the interaction with him and through the great work he does with the ALS Association, and it was like the coolest thing I think I've ever done on the radio. Jake, do you remember this? When my mom was at home listening to the show, and she wasn't doing very well, but here, I'm going to get choked up. But we had George on the show, and I said, it's my mom's birthday. Would you please say happy birthday to my mom, Julie? And he was, you know, happy birthday, Julie, and said a few things. And I mean, I went to commercial break, and the phone rings, and my mom is screaming at the top of her lungs. Like, I mean, I couldn't tell if she was happy, whatever. Wow, did you hear us? Yeah, I did. I heard her, mom. I was on the show.
I haven't thought about that for a long time. I did, yeah.
Yeah, you remember, but it was like, that was, I think about that all the time, every time I see George. But yeah, that's why that story with Buster resonated with me. And like you said, Nate, him telling that story about Freddie Freeman and doing that interview and being involved in that documentary. Well, we have to watch that on Sunday, right?
Oh, man. I mean, yeah, the one of the big things we do with Big Steps is we support a group called Camp Kesem. And if you listen to the show, you've heard me talk about it, but what Camp Kesem is a camp for children who have lost a parent to cancer or have a parent who's currently battling cancer. And, you know, Jake, you weren't a kid, I know, but we've talked a lot about you losing both of your parents to cancer and, you know, what that does. But for little kids that, you know, they're going to school every day, their classmates can't identify with what they're going through. They're processing something, you know, tragic at such an early age and trying to learn how to navigate it. And they get to go to this camp for a week at a time with other kids who are going through the exact same thing that they are. And they become family members with these other kids. And I go to the camp every year when I get a chance. Didn't get to have it last year because of the pandemic.
Some would argue me at 27, I was a kid.
You know what? We all kind of can say that about ourselves. But I've watched my friend Sean's kids grow up. I can't believe, like, his oldest, Millen, is like a high school kid now because it's been 9 years. And that just blows me away. And he still has. The first year we did the Big Steps race, my cousin John Bucati did a huge painting of Sean running the Boston Marathon, and we presented it to Sean's wife and kids. We went up to visit them in Chicago a couple years ago, and the one painting that Millen has in his room, the one thing hanging on the wall, is that painting we gave him of his dad. And man, that just busted me up big time, you know, like his dad was such an incredible guy, and he doesn't get a chance to grow up with him, and it's just not fair. And there's a lot of kids like that, like Freddie Freeman, and what a cool thing that Freddie is, you know, honoring his parents' legacy the way that he is. But you know, I think that any of us that know a kid that's going through something like that, like, we owe it to them to help them keep the memory of their parents alive. I'm sorry. Getting choked up thinking about this, but Jake, did you watch WandaVision?
I have not.
So Jake is going to laugh at me like crazy for saying this, because I've always been the one that kind of, like, you know, mocked the Marvel universe
comic,
and everything.
And by the way, let me correct you. You said Jake's not a kid, but damn it, he's a kid at heart.
That's right. Yeah. I hope we all are. Well, I don't want to grow up like that, but there was a line.
I think I was a 14-year-old at 27.
There's a line in WandaVision that was like one of the most beautiful lines from a TV show or movie I've ever seen in my life, and it makes me think of Sean all the time now that I saw it. And the line was, "What is grief if not love persevering?" And I mean, like that right there is, you know, it hurts. Like you almost look forward to the hurt a little bit because it reminds you how much you still love the person that you lost. You know, and listening to the story about Freddie Freeman, I'm looking forward to watching that documentary tonight.
Yeah, I mean, I could understand.
Sunday.
Yeah.
No, Sunday.
Well, you know, watch it tonight and tell us tomorrow.
Yeah, let's know how it goes.
I'm a mess right now. I can't keep anything straight.
Yeah, I mean, I probably it was about 5 years ago, I'd ran across some VHS tapes of my dad used to just set it up during Christmas and videotape our family unopened, you know, just unwrapping presents. And I think I was like a freshman in college, and my brothers, you know, my younger brother was a junior in high school. And, you know, I put a bunch of them on DVD, and my grandfather was still alive at the time, and he could not handle hearing my mom's voice. It's an interesting thing, you know.
I can't.
I have a voice, you know. I have like the last voicemail my mom sent me. I still have it in MP3, and it's you know, when you hear, it's hard. Sometimes it's also, you know, it's a great memory too.
But how about that picture you sent me of your mom in high school?
Right.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
I choked up with that.
Yeah, know, there's that. Yeah. That's just a beautiful picture of going through stuff like that. It's, you know, it opens up some sure, it's hard, but nothing great in life happens without it being hard, you know. And that's you know, processing, everybody's different, and people handle things differently, and you know, sometimes even me, you know, I can handle stuff that I can't. Some days are, you know, you never know. You never truly know. Some days you can handle it and some days you can't. You know, some days like I enjoy hearing my mom's voice, and some days, you know, it's the last thing I want to hear. It's it's interesting, and it's a great perspective from Freddie Freeman, and I'm super excited to watch that. And I had no idea. I had no idea those stories that Buster was talking about. So, you know, Buster said, I told Steven that before we went on air. Buster's like, hey, you know, I really want to mention this story. And he said to me, he's like, it might be one of the most special things I've ever been involved with.
Wow.
So, you know, when he said that, it's like, hey, make sure we ask him about it. And now, with that being said, I can't wait to see the end product.
You know, my favorite part about sports is the concept that the real life human drama that is unfolding on the field. These are real, living, breathing human beings, and that's one of the reasons that I get kind of annoyed sometimes. We get so buried in statistics and all that stuff, because what's much more compelling to me is the human being, you know, that's stepping in that batter's box and the different trials and tribulations that each individual's been through in his life, you know. And for him to have the ability to tell that story, help Freddie Freeman tell that story. You know, that this Buster always covered World Series after World Series after World Series, and he says this is one of the most powerful things he's ever been a part of.
My favorite part, my favorite thing about sports is Patrick Mahomes.
That's a real human being, right?
You ask me, what's your favorite thing about sports? And I tell people Patrick Mahomes.
I ran up to get a picture with him about like your mom would have with George Brett back in the day at opening day. No,
my mom would have, screamed to alert everyone. And then she would have ran over there.
I think we let out a little bit of a scream. Jake was pretty disgusted by her behavior right that day.
Yeah, well.
I still get...
How's like, that when different I, when than I'm, any other day?
Sometimes I get a smile on my face, that I, you know, because you talked about it, listening to your mom's voice and things like that. Sometimes I'll try to, like I'll try to think, you know, what my mom, because she never had a chance to meet the twins, like what she would think of things that they do or how she would react to, like, Richie and Phil. But a lot of times I'd think, like, about... like what Jake's mom and my mom, like what they would think about some of the things Jake and I have done together, and then I think it's better that I don't know what they think
right.
about some of those things. Like, sometimes, like, I wish I knew what they thought of this.
No,
but then other times, like, I'm glad that I don't know what they think of this because I don't think it would be good. But it would be, but we'd be informed repeatedly.
Oh, I would have a lesson learned.
Steven, <You know? laughs> why do you say those things on the radio? They're going to fire you. No, they aren't, Mama. Oh, well, you know what, Mama? They might.
They
but
might.
Still. You know what?
When, when you were talking about how much your mom loved George Brett, I was thinking about, like, I think your mom obviously loved George even more than my dad, because there was no way in hell my dad would have been waiting in line for anything, anywhere. No, I'm waiting in line for that. But what my dad would do was shout and scream at anybody who dared say a bad word about George Brett. I witnessed many of those, you know, somebody, well, you know, Brett's lost it. Hey, run, run! You know,
inside,
dad screaming in the grocery store again.
Outside, rain, whatever. And George did a bunch of, this was like in the 70s, and then once like 80 hit, and the guy, you know, then they started to die down. But when he was a young player, he did a lot of appearances, and I'll be damned if we weren't at all of them, you know. And so, yeah, man, it's such an, and that's, again, one of the reasons why we love sports so much. It's such an interesting way, I think, that we utilize sports to connect to memories of the past,
mm-hmm.
and not just the memories, but the people that are no longer with us. And like, even now growing, you know, as I watch my kids growing up, so many special moments I think back, or, you know, us watching the game at Arrowhead or Kauffman Stadium, or, you know, getting together to watch the game on TV. It's just, sports are awesome. We should do a show about it. Back after this on WHB.